I realized that all high art on earth is sublime because it transmits the glorious vision of men and women in the light of the higher planes. Appearing interested in completing my thoughts, Alfredo remarked, "The constructive genius has free rein to express spiritual superiority amidst the sublime wellsprings of life. No one creates without seeing, hearing or feeling, and artists of superior mentality are used to seeing, hearing and feeling the highest accomplishments of the path to God." Turning affably to Anicetó, he exclaimed, "Enough digression for now. Let's sit down. You must be tired from your difficult pilgrimage. You need to renew your energies and rest for a bit." Alfredo's love story. We took a few minutes to clean up, and then Alfredo invited us to the table, where Ismelia very graciously asked for various types of fruit to be served. The two keepers of the castle could not have been more gracious. Servers came and went with great joy on their faces. Alfredo's conversation and Ismelia's remarks were filled with interesting and instructive comments. "And what is your overall impression of this endeavor?" Anicetó asked our host. "Excellent, as for the opportunities for accomplishment it offers us," answered Alfredo. "Unfortunately, I don't have the same opinion about the ongoing situation. The zones we serve are full of bad news. The present time is one of devastating conflict for humankind, and the combative vibrations that reach us here are of the sort that could weaken any less resolute heart. Discarnates and incarnates are engaged in destructive wars. It's a shame." 109. "Has there been an increase in the number of the needy who come to the station?" asked our guide. "A huge increase. Our stores of food and medicine have been completely depleted by the starving and the ill. I have 500 co-workers, but at the moment we feel incapable of meeting all our obligations. The masses of sufferers are countless. Our landscape used to be free of darkness for weeks on end, but now..." At that moment, Ismelio asked to be excused from the table. And as Alfredo was looking at me, I ventured to offer, "It's a good thing that you have a selfless companion at your side." Alfredo and Anicetó smiled almost at the same, and Alfredo said, "Ah, my friends. For the time being I do not enjoy such good fortune. My wife and I do enjoy the divine commitment of eternal union, but I still do not deserve her continued presence. She represents heavenly goodness and I, human reality." After a brief pause, he continued, "Anicetó knows our story. You, however, do not. So I'd be happy to tell you about a few memories. This will have a twofold benefit. I'll unburden my heart once more by telling of my wrongs, and you too, who will perhaps soon have new tasks to do on earth, will certainly learn something from my experiences." Ismelia and I safeguarded a small chest of happiness in the world, however, wicked bandits were lurking around our good fortune. My responsibility in the realm of material business was enormous, and because I was unable to grasp my sublime obligations as a husband and father, I didn't endeavor to fulfill my duties to my home and the two little children that God gave us. Ismelia was thus the caregiver of our home. Nevertheless, I forgot that virtue may be tormented by vice at any time, and my dear wife fell victim to the wickedness of a disloyal friend, 110, with whom I had innumerable interests in common in the area of finance. She silently put up with my wretched associate's pursuit for several years, but when he finally realized the futility of his criminal attitude, out of blatant desperation he sought to poison my unwary spirit. He began by warning me about Ismelia's conduct. He stunned me by surrounding her in false accusations. He bribed our domestic servants and placed spies to keep an eye on my dear Ismelia in her tasks as wife and mother. This man had a profound influence on me, and due to the ties that bound him and me together, my wife never felt brave enough to accuse him. As I listened to the slander outside my domestic circle, I became intolerable within it. I was unable to regard my wife with the same ease and absolute trust as before. I saw evil in her smallest gestures and sought to discover ulterior motives in her most innocent words. I even started using veiled accusations against her. Ismailia wept but said nothing. Finally, our wretched persecutor bribed a man of low status, who, one night, stood next to our bedroom like a common, hidden thief, and I was put to the ultimate test. I entered the bedroom in extreme desperation, and when I saw my wife thoroughly at peace, I began to make loud accusations. Fearing I had lost my mind, Ismailia got up. But I didn't listen to her pleas as I searched like a madman for the defiler of my honor. I violently threw open the large old armoire, and ransacked the room. At that moment, the figure of a man stole away in the shadows from the next room, and before I could grab him in my unbridled hatred, he jumped out the window and disappeared into a nearby orchard. I ran desperately, shooting at random but to no avail. I went back to the bedroom, and to pique my hateful rage the stranger had left behind a dashing, brand new hat just to accentuate my terrible sentiments. My eyes flushed with anger, and spewing insults, I meant to put an end to Ismailia, bathed in tears at my feet. Tit. However, something that I could never understand paralyzed my murderous arm. Shouting blasphemies and deaf to her pleas, I left, overcome with revulsion. The very next day, I claimed my right to sole custody of my children and arranged for Ismailia, who had turned into a pillar of grief, to be sent back to her father's plantation. I hired a governess for the kids, and soon thereafter took a steamship to Europe, where I stayed for more than 3 years. I never looked for any serious proof, and although my spirit was incessantly tormented, I stifled my innermost sentiments and never sought news of my defamed wife. One day I received a brief letter from the French coast. A relative provided me with information about her. After 2 years of anguish, caught between homesickness and abandonment, Ismailia had come down with tuberculosis and had died in a state of terrible mental torture. I decided to return. I settled again in Rio, educated my kids and kept my sorrowful widowhood in the disenchantment of my heart. The years rolled by, when I was called to my ex-associate's deathbed. Facing death, the unhappy fellow confessed his hateful crime and asked for forgiveness, which I unfortunately was unable to give. From then on I was an incurable madman. Tired and aging, I planned to go to my in-laws to try to repair the injustice in some way, but death didn't give me the chance. I returned to the realm of discarnates in a deplorable spiritual state. He paused, only to continue with emotion, "I don't have to tell you that I received all the support I needed from Ismailia. Still, unfortunately for me, we were separated. I didn't deserve the blessing of a sublime union. Ismailia keeps a close eye on me, but she resides on a higher plane, which I must make an effort to reach. For a long time now, I have dedicated myself to the services of our aid station. Consecrating myself to the ignorant and suffering. My saintly Ismailia comes here once a month to lift my spirits and support me in my struggles. But couldn't she be transferred here permanently?" asked Vicente, as impressed as I was with this moving story. Alfredo smiled and said, "I know that Ismailia has worked for it, according the rule that those who are more highly evolved are always in a position to help those who are less so, and I know that her ideal of eternal union is the same as mine. However, I know that she has been advised by our superiors concerning my current need for effort and solitude. I must learn the price of happiness so that I will never again disdain God's blessings. My wife does want to come down here to be with me permanently, but I must learn to rise to her level, and that is why we have not yet received permission for a permanent spiritual partnership." Noticing our emotion, he concluded, "It am expiating impetuous crimes. I lost my peace, my home and my devoted companion because of my sinful impulsiveness. As you can see, I didn't kill or rob anyone, poisoned myself. Slander is an invisible monster that attacks people through careless ears and unwary eyes." Information and explanations. Ismailia's return to the circle of conversation kept us from continuing the matter. Perhaps taking advantage of the opportunity, Anicetto asked Alfredo, "How do you feel about our continuing our journey now? We thought we might still make it down to the Earth's surface today. Alfredo gave us a meaningful look and said, "I don't feel I have the right to interfere with your plans, but I think it would be better if you spent the night here. Our instruments are indicating the approach of a large magnetic storm for today. Bloody battles are being fought down on the earth, and people who are not in the actual line of fire are nonetheless in the line of words and thoughts. Those who are not actually fighting in the battles of war are nonetheless involved in the combat of ideas by discussing the situation." 115. Very few men and women are striving to cultivate a higher level of spirituality. Thus it is only natural that all across the planet, thick clouds of mental residue from inattentive incarnates are intensifying, and this in turn increases their afflictions. Anicetor was listening attentively. "I'm not concerned about you in particular," continued Alfredo, addressing our instructor, "but I believe these two friends would be in for an unpleasant surprise." "You're right," agreed Anicito. "I value the sacrifice our fellow spirits are making in the work of preserving human health." "They are indeed fine workers," said the lord of the castle. "From time to time, I personally visit the centers where they are performing their holy work. Humankind seems to prefer the condition of remaining a child forever. It builds and tears down the treasures of civilization as if it were playing with dollhouses. Our friends are working very hard so that magnetic storms, invisible to the human eye, do not emit lethal vibrations that would result in the spread of countless epidemics and the miseries of war. The spirit colonies of Europe, especially those of our level, are suffering bitterly to meet everyone's needs. We have already begun to receive scores of discarnates as a consequence of the bombings. Because it is involved with its own mission, Nosola still cannot imagine all the effort that the world conflict has been demanding of our work in the lower realms. The aid stations of several colonies linked to ours are overcrowded with Europeans who have discarnated under violent circumstances. We have been notified that prayer petitions from Europe have rent the angelic hearts of the highest level co-workers of our Lord Jesus Christ. Following the terrible bombings of England, Holland, Belgium and France, there were others no less extensive. After our spirit mentors had met several times, they decided to transfer at least 50% of the war's discarnates to our new world centers. There are more than 400 right here in our own holding area. But isn't it difficult to aid such people? Asked Anicito in a grave voice. And what about the language issue? Although the aid work in Europe has been intense, it has been very well organized here, explained Alfredo. For each group of 50 discarnates, the old world colonies provide us with one nurse instructor, with whom we can communicate directly. That way, the problem is not so severe, because our part in this collaborative effort consists only in having to furnish service personnel and relief supplies. But wouldn't it be fairer, asked Vicente, for discarnates of this sort to be kept in the actual areas of conflict? Alfred smiled and explained, "Our highest ranking instructors are of the opinion that such gatherings would be fatal to incarnate spirits as a whole. They would establish pestilential focal points of transcendent origin with unpredictable results. Huge numbers of our brothers and sisters who lose their bodies in the devastated areas are unable to escape from the field of death. However, in accordance with our housing quotas, all who show that they are capable of being transferred here are removed from those areas right away so that their tormented thoughts will not weigh too heavily on the vital resources of the stricken regions." Anicito broke in, "The countries of the world will return to massacring each other needlessly. The error of one nation will influence all the others, just as the wailing of one man would disturb the peace of millions. Neutrality is a myth and isolation is a fiction of political pride. Just like billions of other planetary families in the infinite universe, earthly humankind is a family of God. War needlessly causes discarnation en masse. And the individuals who die as a result of war will weigh on the spiritual welfare of the whole earth. As long as there is discord among us, we will pay a grievous price in sweat and tears. War deludes the minds of all peoples, including a large number of centers in the invisible realms. Those who do not take up arms of destruction still use words and ideas of destruction. But all of us will pay our dues. The divine law says that we are to understand and love one another. Everyone will suffer as a result of forgetting that law, but each person individually will be held responsible for the amount of discord he or she has personally brought to the worldwide family. Alfredo seemed to be seriously contemplating these ideas and remarked, "That is only just." Anisato remarked once again after a longer silence, "Last week I visited Alvorada Nova, a spirit colony in the higher realms, and I learned that, at the first declaration of war, advanced centers of higher spirituality from neighboring planets established maximum security measures at the vibrational borders they share with us. Our esteemed neighbors have taught us that we must bear on our own shoulders the weight of the entire production of the evil we cause. In other words, we are obliged to do our dirty laundry in our own quarters." We all smiled at this comparison. Ismelia had remained silent, despite the deep emotion stamped on her face, but she now remarked politely, "Unfortunately, in the collective sense we are still like the Jerusalem of old, enslaved to error. Every day, Jesus heals us and every day we lead him to the cross. Our deeds are reduced to nothing more than recurring failures. We haven't left the training stage of experience. And, unfortunately, we continue to practice politics according to the Caesars, justice according to the Pilates, religious faith according to the Pharisees, priesthood according to the rabbis of the Sanhedrin, belief according to the Jairuses, who believe and doubt at the same time, and business according to the Ananiases and Sapphiras. At this step, we cannot foresee the full range of implications of critical events." Enthusiastic about these explanations, I ventured to say, "But how atrocious destruction by war is." "Yes, but at times like these," Alfredo observed, "prayer is an intense light in the hearts of men and women. It is so true that the stars shine brighter on moonless nights. You should know that, in order to start making arrangements for receiving desperate discarnates, have gone more than once to help with assistance work in Europe. A few days ago, some friends and I went on one such mission to the skies over Bristol. German bombers were flying over that noble English city. The scene of destruction was frightful. In the dead of the night, however, a beam of intense light stood out to our spirit sight. Its rays flashed in the firmament while the bombs hurled to the ground. The head of the expedition suggested that we descend to the source of that luminous beam. I was surprised to find that we were in a church. The sanctuary might have seemed almost dark to human eyes, but it was very bright to ours. Some brave Christians were there, singing hymns. The minister of the worship service read a passage from Acts, where Paul and Silas were singing at midnight in prison, their clear voices rising up to heaven in notes of fervent trust. While bombs were bursting outside, these disciples of the gospel were singing, united in a celestial vibration of living faith. Our leader told us to remain standing before those heroic souls, who brought to mind the early persecuted Christians, as a sign of respect and recognition. He also sang along with the hymns and told us afterwards that city administrators might construct anti-aircraft shelters, but these Christians were building anti-darkness shelters. Sometimes, he concluded, it is necessary to suffer in order to understand the divine blessings. After making some interesting remarks regarding the situation in the physical realms, Anisato resumed determining what we would need for our work. Alfredo offered a friendly suggestion. In light of the imminent storm, you could stay with us for a few more hours, and then be on your way at dawn. And I was deeply surprised when he stated, you can use my car until it is no longer feasible. I'll provide a skilled driver and you'll save a lot of time. I couldn't hide my wonder. I knew about the work done by Nosalas Samaritans, who used large animal-drawn vehicles in their rescue work in the lower regions. But considering the significant problems we had been faced with on the long journey to the aid station, I didn't think it was possible that the institution had such a means of transportation. I later learned that transportation systems in the zones closest to the Earth's surface are based on a transcendent properties of electromagnetism and are more common than one might think. Our guide seemed to be seriously pondering the situation, and then remarked with concern, "We have pressing work to do in the physical realms. Vicente and Andre need to begin their active training." Alfredo smiled kindly, assuring us, "Well, you don't have to look any farther. There is always work to be done no matter where one might be. Wherever there is a spirit of cooperation, God's work is also there. Our two friends could certainly help out around here. For example, they could accompany us in our prayer work, in which there is always plenty to do and many lessons to learn." "Excellent suggestion," exclaimed our instructor. "Individual or group prayer is always a vast reservoir of spiritually edifying lessons. Speaking of which," said Ismelia, "we mustn't delay. It's almost time." As if he had suddenly remembered all the work he had to do, the administrator said to his partner, "Olivia and Madeline need to be advised concerning the provisions that are urgently needed for tonight. We'll need the collaboration of a few more breath technicians. There are quite a few brothers and sisters in a serious state after having been overcome by powerful physical sensations." "Breath technicians?" I asked, perplexed, before Ismelia could make any remarks about this type of service. "Yes, my friend," answered Alfredo. "Even on Earth, the healing breath is a sublime human privilege. However, while incarnate we are very slow to lay hold of the great treasures that are ours by right. We usually live there, wasting time on fantasies, believing in futilities or feeding suspicions. Those who could grasp the far-reaching implications of this subject could create highly effective breath therapy processes." "But is such a gift available to any incarnate spirit?" asked Vicente, sharing my surprise. Alfredo thought for a few seconds and answered, "As with magnetic passes, which can be done by a large number of people with noticeable benefits, the healing breath may also be used by most humans with impressive results. However, we must add that at any time and in any situation, individual effort is indispensable. Every worthwhile accomplishment requires serious support. The divine good demands human willingness to manifest itself actively. Our breath technicians were not trained quickly. They practiced for a long time and acquired experience at a high price. With everything, there is a right way to start. They are respected workers because of what they have achieved. They earn significant returns and enjoy enormous respect, but for all this they must preserve the purity of their words and the holiness of their intentions." Understanding the interest that his words were arousing, the administrator continued after a brief pause, "In the physical realms, in order for the breath to be sufficiently established, it is imperative for the individual to have a healthy stomach, a mouth free of evil and accustomed to saying good things, and a righteous mind that is interested in helping. By complying with these requirements, we will have a calming and invigorating breath that is both stimulating and healing. By means of such breath, health, comfort and life can be transmitted on the Earth's surface as well as here." And since Vicente and I could not hide our perplexity, Alfredo remarked, "This is nothing new. In addition to physically touching those he healed, Jesus sometimes touched them with the divine breath. The breath of life runs through all creation. Every sacred page that comments on the beginning of life refers to it. Haven't you ever thought of the wind as the creative breath of nature? As for me, ever since I entered Campo de Paz, where I was taken in the worst spiritual condition imaginable, I have been learning wonderful lessons on this subject, so much so that in heading this station I have encouraged as much as possible the training of new workers in this area. I have offered special recompense to those who decide to begin this specialized task because not everyone can do it." Ismelia greeted some important-looking workers, who were preparing for this task. Impressed with what I had heard, I closely observed the preparations. However, when I was alone with Anicetu once more, I shared my enormous surprise with him. He answered in a confidential tone, "You are forgetting that the Bible itself, alluding to the creation of Adam, says that the Creator breathed on the form he had created, passing the breath of life to him. referring to our incarnate brothers and sisters, we must realize, Andre, that even coming from imperfect but good-willed humans, every breath with the intention of relieving or healing is significant because all of us are direct heirs of the divine power. Moreover, it is also necessary to realize that we are not dealing with something exclusive. You yourself spent a short while in our Ministry of Assistance. There is a large department there that specializes in the subject, and where worthy co-workers devote themselves to this type of work. On the physical plane, every mouth with a holy intention can render appreciable aid, but generous and pure mouths can distribute divine aid, transmitting vital fluids of health and comfort. 124. I was hoping that Anicetor would continue by showing me the magnetic qualities of breath, but Alfredo enthusiastically and eagerly approached us, exclaiming, "The moment of our assistance and prayer work has arrived. TT will be our pleasure to accompany you," answered Anicetor with a smile. We had to end the lesson and attend to other duties. Defenses against evil. We descended the steps, and as I stood in front of the high walls, I could observe the extent of the stately building's defenses. That edifice was much more important than any old castle that had been made into a fortress. Outside once again, I was able to make out the details of the panoramic view more clearly. I saw that we had entered through a forward bulwark that highlighted the stateliness of the majestic building. Its general lines stood out distinctly. I was especially impressed by the fortifications. I saw the message tower, obviously devoted to defense, the pointed bulwark, rising above the moat that allowed for an abundant flow of running water, the watchtower, elegant and imperious. I noticed the patrol road, the cistern, the embrasures, and then the stockades and the barbicans, the whole complexity of the entire defensive setup, and the armament. I recognized it in the accoutrements installed along the walls, replicas of the small cannons on Earth. However, I was moved at seeing at the top of the watchtower an enormous bright white flag of peace fluttering in the wind like a wide, snowy plume. Alfredo noticed the wonder that had come over Vicente and me. "I know the impression that our defenses have made on you," he said, pausing to explain. "You obviously hadn't imagined that so much fortification would be necessary here. As you can see, our flag is one of peace and harmony. However, it is crucial to realize that we are performing a duty that must be defended in all circumstances. As long as the universal law of love does not prevail, it is imperative for the reign of justice to persist. Our station has been placed here like a sheep amidst the wolves, and although it is not our job to exterminate wild beasts, we must nevertheless defend the work of the good against unwarranted attacks. The organizations of our brothers and sisters who are devoted to evil are extremely vast. Don't get the idea that they are all ignorant or unaware. The majority of them consists of the wicked and criminals. They are truly diabolical spirits. Have no doubt about it. My God!" Vicente exclaimed in astonishment. "Why do they deliberately organize themselves for evil purposes? Don't they know that the entire universal treasure belongs to the Divine Majesty? Don't they recognize the sovereign power?" "Ah, my friend. I asked those very same questions when I arrived here for the first time. The answers I received were incisive and conclusive. We could ask the same questions about the Earth, Vicente. The criminals who create victims of war, the exploiters of the public welfare, the stingy misers, those thirsty for unjustified dominance, and the vain ones full of foolishness? They all know, as well as our adversaries here, that everything belongs to God and that the human being is simply a beneficiary of the divine assets. They know that death called their predecessors to the truth and to account for themselves, and that the same road is waiting for them. Even so, they torment themselves like veritable lunatics, piling up wealth to their ruin and abusing the holiest opportunities. Here you can see the same thing. They want to dominate others rather than dominate themselves, they make demands instead of giving, and thus they enter into perennial conflict with the divine spirit of the law. Once the duel between their fantasy and the truth of the Father is established, The poor beings resist the Lord's corrections and become true spirits of darkness until one day they decide to take another course. Intrigued with his profound remarks, I asked, "But how do you explain the basis for such an attitude? We can understand such delusion occurring on the earth, but here,